Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello, folks, and welcome to People with a Purpose, a Strong Tower Radio production that talks to people who make a difference in their world and for Christ. On the line, I have Ron Price. Ron Price is a mediator. He is a speaker, author, and he's a Christian man. Ron, welcome to People with a Purpose.
Oh, Tom, my pleasure. So glad to be with you. Thank you.
And, you know, our listeners will learn to appreciate the work that you have done because you're going to speak to a need that everyone has, and that is improving relationships.
You know, Tom, I couldn't put it any better myself, and thank you for that. At the end of the day, although I hate that expression, life really is all about relationships, certainly our relationship with God, relationship with others. So, yeah, we'll have some fun, I hope.
Absolutely. Let us start out with prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, you developed relationships. You are the creator of relationships. Mm-hmm. You created human beings, and you created me and Ron and our listeners. Lord, be with us as we find out how we can improve our relationships. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Ron, I've appreciated our relationship as we prepared for this series of interviews. Ron, you're all about relationships, and you do that professionally. It must be deep in your soul. Tell people about what a mediator is. I think you say something about that you get between two angry people and...
people who are at odds with each other anyway. They're not always angry. That's frequently the case. But yeah, two people who have a difference between them of whatever nature and they don't seem to be able to resolve it themselves will hire me to be their mediator and help them decide how to resolve it.
Now, our listeners will probably like to know a little bit more of your history, how long you've been doing this, and what brought you to the place that you wanted to do such an unpleasant task.
Whoa, and we have 4 hours for this program? Is that what you told me?
Another day, yes.
Bad joke, I know. You know, in my BC days, before Christ came into my life, I was married and divorced. And that surprised me because I never saw myself getting divorced. But we didn't have children, and that made it easier. But I then met the Lord as a result of that. So I call that a good bargain. Also met another lady with whom we're going to celebrate our 42nd anniversary at the end of this year. So, but one day I was looking through the want ads, and Tom, I was not looking for work. I was gainfully employed. I was happy, content. But I was drawn to the want ads, and I was drawn to one ad in particular that said the district court was starting a new program called divorce mediation. And when I say I was drawn to it as a fellow believer, Tom, you're going to understand that the Lord was urging me to go in that direction. And so I called and got information, and sure enough, I said, yeah, I want to do that because I so hated divorce. I knew the pain of it, even though, again, we didn't have children, which makes it a whole lot easier. But it was still, I knew it was wrong. I knew it was not the best. And so I thought this is an opportunity to help people do divorce less painfully, and especially if they have children. They can't afford to have a worse divorce than they did a marriage, and yet many people do. So I got trained, and for 30 years of my life, I again put myself between people who are at odds with each other. And as I often say, if that doesn't tell you I'm a sick man, I don't know what will.
Yes.
But it was always a great joy, Tom, to watch people come into my office, bitter, hostile, adversarial, and leave not necessarily best buds, but at least able to work with each other in a better fashion. And especially, again, as parents, that's crucial for the health and well-being of the children.
You know, I'm sure that many of our listeners are saying, my relationship is so bad. Ron, what you're telling is only a dream. How could that happen between a spouse, between a former friend, a neighbor, co-worker, or you name it? Can that really happen?
That the relationship turn around? Oh, yeah. Was that your question?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it can. You know, my focus was always, Tom, in three areas. I tried to get the people talking to and with each other instead of at each other. If you're talking at someone, you're putting them on the defensive. They're probably doing the same to you. Effective communication is virtually impossible. So talk to and with each other, not at each other. Focus on the real issues, the real problem, if you will. So often in a dispute, conflict, call it what you will, we bring in all these side tangents and get off in matters that aren't really the key issue. So I help people focus on the key issues, and I got them to look to the future. At least I tried to. Try to get them to envision a different future, a better future, and what would they have to change to get there. And so in a sense, I gave them some hope that yes, indeed, if we stop doing the activities, behaviors that got us into this problem and start initiating some better, more effective and positive behaviors and so forth, then yeah, relationships can turn around. There's no question about that. Do they always? No. Should they always? I wouldn't say that either. But can they always? Oh yeah, there's always the possibility.
So how does that background of mediation lead to this three-book series? I call it the Sandbox series, or Play Nice in Your Sandbox at, and you've got three different versions of it. You have the first, which is work. Then you have the family at home. And then finally at church. How did that happen?
Tom, what's the statistic? You've heard it, I'm sure. 80% of Americans say they want to write a book. Have you ever heard that?
It's been a while, but I think I've heard that.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if it's 80, but it's a large number of people say they want to write a book, and I was in that group. And so a big part of my field, as I was doing divorce mediation, I really became a fan of doing marriage the right way, marriage education. I started going to a conference called Smart Marriage at various locations around the country. That led me to write a column in my local newspaper. Every Sunday, you'd see a little box with my smiling face writing a column on how to do marriage well. And after, oh, I don't know, 6-8 months or so, I got smart and I started bringing in other experts that I had met in my various trainings, and I had them write the column for me with their name and picture. I didn't try to pretend it was my wisdom. But after 5 years or so, the newspaper said, ah, that's a good enough run. We don't need it anymore. And it's funny, the week they told me that, more people came up to me and said, oh, Ron, thanks for your column, than perhaps any other week before then. But that's all right. That's all right. But one day I realized, you know what? I've already written a book. It's in those columns. And even though the focus of the column was on marriage and family, Tom, relationships are relationships. And I kind of thought that I'd write at least two books. I was thinking work and home. Church was a later development, if you will. But I just took those columns and I repurposed them with a work and employment focus. And that became Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Work. So I don't know if that was cheating or not, but it worked for me.
Well, you know, Ron, I think that because of the origin in that short, pithy format of a newspaper, that's why the book pops. Literally, it's 2 to 4 pages, 3 to 6 pages long, and just enough. It's almost like a devotional book. It changes your perspective for the moment, communicates an idea, and then it's time for you to apply those principles.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Tom, personally, I am never going to read War and Peace. No offense to Leo Tolstoy, but I look at the size of that book and go, I can't do that. I don't like long chapters either. And so that's exactly right, because they were newspaper columns. Each chapter, as you said, is very short. And I end with a chapter challenge. All right, you've just gotten a tip, a tool, a technique. Before you read the next chapter, go implement that. Go put that into practice. So it becomes a part of who you are, not just some good information that you read and then forgot. We all know that experience. We've all been there, done that.
And to our listeners, we're talking about the books in the series, Play Nice, and that is in your sandbox. The first one is The Work. Second one is At Home, and the third one is At Church. And Ron, we've been talking for 3 or more months, and I have been touching this book, reading the book, and I keep coming to, it's not just a read it once and lay it down. I am still thinking about one of the chapters that we're going to talk about later, but I am literally, it's changing my thinking. So you've succeeded in affecting those who read your book.
Tom, I'm going to start calling you Barnabas, because as you recall, Barnabas was an encourager. So your words are greatly encouraging to me and much appreciated. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Let's talk about why you chose the analogy of sandbox. That seems so simple.
You know, Tom, I should have a ready, set answer for that because I've been asked it before, and I don't really know. I know part of me you'll get from this. When people ask me, where did you grow up? I always answer, I'm trying to do it in Farmington, New Mexico. I don't want to grow up. I don't mind maturing and being adult, but why grow up? Then what? What does that mean? But so there is a playful streak to me. My wife says it's ornery at times, but what does she know? There's a playful streak to me. So it just, I guess the Lord must have given me that thought, and I just loved it. And then the Play Nice became an acronym. I didn't go into the title with that thought, but I don't know how much time we have in this segment, but I can go back to a workshop I was at in Georgia. And I was supposed to give a presentation the next day, and I wanted to try this Play Nice. And all of a sudden, the acronym just popped into my head. I had to slow down and write it out, what each letter stands for in the play and the nice. So thank you, Lord. I mean, I'd love to be able to take credit, but I think that would be deceitful if I did that.
Well, we're going to look at each one of those acronym letters, and they're very helpful. What are some of the insights that you have for this book? You listed them in your introduction.
Well, you know, I got to tell you a funny story about the introduction before I do that.
Okay.
I'm familiar with Bill and Pam Farrell. They're the authors of Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I used to have a nonprofit marriage and family coalition that I co-founded. And we brought Bill and Pam Farrell to our area twice to bless people. And so I first wrote a 9-chapter ebook called Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Work. And I reached out to Bill Farrell and I said, Bill, you've written 30-some books. This is my first one. Would you mind taking a look at it and giving me any thoughts that you think are appropriate? He said, yeah, I'll do that for you. Well, he calls me up a week later, Tom. He says, Ron, you wrote a book called Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Work, didn't you? I said, well, yeah, Bill, why do you ask? He said, oh, I just thought it might be nice to say something about the sandbox somewhere in your book.
Oh.
Tom, I just launched right into the Play Nice model. I never mentioned the sandbox once.
Oh, my.
And I said, Bill, that's a good idea. So now as you read the book, yes, I get into some insights that we learned from the sandbox, such as life can be messy at times, and sand doesn't taste very good, and what we build may be torn down by others or by the elements. We also learned in the sandbox that some don't play well with others, and that sometimes you just have to take your shovel and go home. And I'm certain there's many more lessons that we could have learned from the sandbox, but those are some of the main ones that jumped out at me.
Yes, I appreciate that. John is smiling in the background as he's listening to our interview. Then you follow up immediately, life doesn't always go according to our plans.
Yeah, boy, anybody who's older than, what, 3 has learned that lesson? But the better we get along with others, the easier life is, the more satisfying it is, and more enjoyable it is. But again, that's, you know, Tom, you know, I know, John, our faithful assistant helping us out here today, and all of our listeners know we have a common enemy who hates us. And as you said, God invented relationships. It was his idea. So the enemy knows, well, good, God likes relationships. I'll work on destroying relationships. And we have to admit, he's done a pretty good job of it, hasn't he?
Yes. And so, in other words, it's not you and me in disagreement, but there's a third party who's egging it on.
Isn't that Ephesians 6, I believe, that our battle is not against powers, it is against powers and principalities, it's not against flesh and blood. Well, no, just so you say, sometimes we look at each other as the enemy. If I'm in a dispute with you, I'm going to look at you as the problem. Well, you're not the problem any more than I'm the problem. Whatever's come between us is the problem. But if we're focusing on each other, I'm getting ahead of myself. That's the N in the NICE model. But if we're focusing on each other, then by definition, neither one of us are looking at the problem, and we're not going to resolve it.
That's right. Here's a couple other thoughts that you have in the introduction. Conflict is not inherently good or bad. I always thought it was bad.
Yeah, well, you're in the majority. That's because you're normal, Tom.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I'm not sure normal's a compliment, but you're welcome anyway. I do an exercise when I do training in the workplace where I'll call out a word. I say, now, I'm going to call out this word, and I want you to write down the first 5 words that you associate with this word. You ready? Here's the word. Conflict. And they'll write down the first 5 words that pop into my mind. And then I'll say, all right, now look at your words and decide how many of those words are positive terms, how many of them are negative terms, and how many of them are neutral terms. And then I'll get a count. And Tom, I'm telling you, invariably, I'll get a few positive terms to describe or associate with conflict. I'll get a few neutral terms, but I'll get a whole bunch of negative terms. And then I'll ask, what does that tell us about conflict? And they'll say, oh, it's negative. Well, is it? How do you explain the positives and the neutrals? I think to answer your question, and the reason you're normal, is that we can all look back in our lives to conflict situations that we didn't handle very well. And it cost us. It caused us some pain. We lost a relationship. We lost an opportunity, what have you, because we didn't handle the conflict well. However, if we had handled the conflict well, we might look back on that situation as a positive, as a growth experience, as a welcome change in our lives. So it's not just conflict so much as how we handle the conflict. Does that make sense?
It sure does. You know, Ron, I think we should leave a cliffhanger as we go into the break that disputes can be healthy. We're going to ask our listeners to think about how disputes can be healthy, and we will be right back.
When you're taking a trip, it's important to stay on the right road and to follow the GPS or roadmap to be sure that you get to your destination. Likewise, on your trip to heaven, it is vital to follow the roadmap, the Bible, God's positioning system. To do that, stay with Strong Tower Radio as we uplift the Bible and proclaim God's character. If you'd like to help with this mission, go to our secure website, www.strongtowerradio.org, and click on the donate button or call 231-468-2087. We thank you and may God bless you as we proclaim God's character together.
Well, folks, Ron Price and Tom Majeure are back, and we're talking about playing nice in your sandbox at work. It's part of a series of books, and we've enjoyed the first section interview with him. We left you listeners with the idea to think over, and do you have your answers? Disputes can be healthy. Ron, they've had a chance to think about this for 60 plus seconds. Can disputes be healthy?
No, I don't think so, Tom. I don't think so. All right, stop it. I'm kidding. You're going to hang up on me now, aren't you? No, of course they can. Of course they can, although your point's valid. People don't think so. When I called you normal in the last segment, most people look at conflict as horrible and terrible, and they do everything they can to avoid it. Well, there's one big problem with that. You can't avoid conflict. You're an imperfect person dealing with other imperfect people. And to think that there won't be conflict from time to time is just, it's foolhardy. It's just foolhardy. So I often say conflict is inevitable. Damaged relationships, poor morale, low productivity, those are all optional. And in fact, when you are able to resolve conflicts, you benefit in two ways. One, you've resolved whatever the difference is that's come between you. But also, your relationship is strengthened because then you have more confidence that if conflicts come up again, they're not as scary. You can say, wait a minute, we know how to resolve these, so let's take it on and let's build a better mousetrap, for lack of a better illustration. But yeah, when people will work together and get out of my way or your way and find an our way, oh, yeah, relationships can be so much better, so much more enjoyable, have more vitality. Conflict can be a wonderfully growth-enhancing experience if handled well.
Healed relationships, I agree with you. I can relate to as had difficulty with an individual. You resolve that, and you have a confidence that you resolved it before and you can solve the next conflict, and maybe it'll be a lesser conflict in the future.
Yeah, and you're more willing to engage because, all right, it's not quite as intimidating as it was before. And hey, we did well the last time. Let's, I'm not saying go out of your way to look for a conflict, you know, just so you can have another victory. You don't have to go looking for it. It'll find you. But yeah, I absolutely agree. I love that word you use, confidence. The next time could be just as well or just as good or even better.
You know, Ron, we're going to get into this play nice. So that's the reason, this acronym of this book. And this is a work environment. But let me share something that is very near and dear to me, is that I had a fellow worker, a co-worker, same level of responsibility that I had. And I felt that he was doing something that was not healthy for my relationship with my boss.
Yeah.
And I went and talked to my boss about it, and he says, why don't the two of you, go down to a classroom? I was an administrator in the school. He ran one department, I ran another. And he says, why don't you go down to a classroom and just meet and talk this out? I believe in both of you. And I think that the two of you can work this out. We literally went to the classroom. I can envision it. It was next to the last one on the end of the hall. And
yeah,
we sat down. Sometimes we were sitting, sometimes we were standing. We talked it out. And literally, I tell you, to this day, our relationship was enhanced so much in a healthy way. I learned to love that man.
Isn't that great? Thank you. That's a perfect story. If I read another book, I'm going to include that story. That's perfect, Tom. Thank you.
I will share that with you. Now, some differences may not be totally worked out. Tell me that's not true.
Tom, it is true. It is true. I mean, sometimes people's desires are so far apart. You know what? Part of my work is I help people prepare for marriage. I don't believe in premarital counseling, but I'm a big fan of premarital preparation. And one of the tools I use in my premarital preparation is called Prepare Enrich. It's an online survey that people take when they're engaged, but before they get married. And each person will answer like 200 questions about what they're expecting from the relationship. Well, Tom, let me ask you this. If they take that survey and they find out that one wants zero or one child and the other wants 15 to 20. Do you think they should get married?
They need to talk.
They sure do need to talk. But if they're both strong in that desire, don't try to fit a square peg into a round hole. Don't force, oh, okay, we'll have 7.5 children. I mean, come on. You know what? Maybe we're not the best fit for each other. I'd rather find that out now rather than later. Or suppose one decides, what's a rural town in your area? Tom, give me any rural town.
Oh, that's a little town of, let's say, Marion.
Marion, perfect. Marion. So they do this survey, and they find out that one wants to live in Marion, and the other wants to live in New York City. Is that a dispute that could be resolved? Is there any coming to terms on Marion versus New York City? I personally don't think so.
Well, you know, they did a TV series on it. It's called Green Acres.
Oh, there you go. That's right. And that made for a lot of laughs, a lot of humor, but I don't, in real life, that's a great point, by the way, thank you. I don't know in real life if they could really, it would take a Christ-like selflessness to say, all right, I'm going to give up everything that I want from life and just yield and do it your way and be happy about that. I mean, yeah, if you can do that, that's one set of circumstances. But again, there are some disputes that, no, I just don't think they can be resolved. And again, I don't know that they have to in many cases. I think people give up too easy. I think they decide that it's not resolvable when they haven't really given it a fair chance. But again, in my humble opinion, I don't believe in this imperfect world, this side of heaven, that all disputes can be resolved.
Let's head into your book and talk about section one, turning from conflicts when you can and should. Is can and should the same in conflict avoidance?
Well, and again, you used a common word, Tom. I'm going to call you on it. I don't teach conflict avoidance. I just don't do that. If I use that in the book, forgive me. I would hope I didn't. Conflict prevention, it's a whole different mindset, a whole different concept. And again, you got me looking through the book now. I hope I didn't use that word.
I think I paraphrased your book, probably incorrectly.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So many conflicts can be prevented. So many conflicts, Tom. They're about minor, trivial matters that really don't matter that much, but they took on a life of their own. I often say we get hung up on matters, not only were they not a hill to die on, they weren't a hill to get sick on. And yet, if we're not careful, they're going to take over our time, our energy, our resources, steal our joy, our peace. And so I have a model. That's the play portion in each of the books. Four-step model to prevent trivial matters from blowing up, and oftentimes they should. Now, if it's a matter that's going to threaten the health of the relationship, no, that should not be ignored or prevented. That should be dealt with. Well, that's what we get into in the nice portion of each book.
Les, let's talk about P, push the panic button.
Oh, you're paraphrasing again. Stop it.
Oh, sorry.
Push the pause button. You know, that's funny, Tom. I am going to write another book, Push the Panic Button. I like it. Push the pause button. And in this, I tell a story. I'll tell it briefly here about a time I went to Walmart. It was during the day, but it was on Christmas Eve. And maybe I just caused a bunch of your listeners to tune out, because how brilliant can this guy be if he goes to Walmart on Christmas Eve? But I needed something. And, the place was packed. The place was packed. But before I got out of my vehicle, I had an inner dialogue that went something to the effect of, you are about to go into a building with hundreds, if not thousands, of idiots, jerks, maniacs. I hope I can use those terms. People so stressed out and frazzled by the tension that precedes Christmas. I said, you can join them if you wish, or you can choose your attitude and choose not to get sucked into that negativity, hostility, and so forth. I said, all right, let's try that. Tom, I walked into Walmart. You could just see it on people's faces. And you know the holidays. they're coming up on us pretty quick here. They're wonderful times, and yet getting ready and making all the preparations and, you know, dealing with the crowds, it can be a stressful time. And I just started smiling at people. I started saying, Merry Christmas. Oh, after you. Oh, let me get that for you. I was Mr. Rogers in the neighborhood. I was Mr. Congeniality. And Tom, I got my items. Please don't ask me what I got. I have no recollection. But I still remember the joy I had leaving Walmart, having chosen my attitude. Tom, all of us get up in the morning. Some mornings we're not in a good mood. You know, we might start our day with an argument with our spouse or a child. We might have negative interactions with fellow motorists as we're driving to work. We can go into that workplace in that negative, hostile attitude if we want, but I don't recommend it. You do that often enough, you'll be looking for a new job. Why not push the pause button? Why not say, you know what, all right, hold on, this day's not off to a great start, but I'm at work now. I'm going to bring a great attitude into work. I'm going to be the most productive person in this workplace today. You ready? Break. Tom, if you choose that mindset, what kind of day are you more likely to have? Up, down, or neutral?
It's going to be up.
Thank you. And this isn't rocket science we're talking here. Same thing at the end of the day. You have bad days at work. Things don't go well. Things weren't delivered, or people didn't carry out what they had promised, whatever. You can go home in a rotten mood. You can barge right into that house and take it out on your family. Tom, we've all done it, but why? Why not push the pause button? Why not just sit in the car and say, all right, boy, I hope I never have another day like today, but I'm home now. And I'm going to do my part to make sure we have a wonderful evening. Again, Tom, not a hard question. If you come into the home with that attitude, are you more likely to have an up evening, a down evening, or no different?
It's going to be up.
Thank you. I mean, the odds anyway, you can't control the whole situation. You can't control the other people, but you're doing your part by pushing the pause button. Such a simple concept that if people would know and put into practice, they would prevent a lot of conflicts because they wouldn't say something that they'd later have to regret or do something that they'd later wish they hadn't. Push the pause button.
Ron, let's look at the L of play.
In the At Work book, it's list of 10, and I tell an interesting story. I don't know where I got it. I did not make up this story. I don't know where I got it. But I believe I talked about an insurance agent, although it could be any profession, where this fellow was retiring after 50 years. And over that 50-year career, nobody could ever remember him saying anything bad, negative, accusatory, what have you, about anyone. And so they decide to throw a party because that's a marvelous career. And at the party, one of the young agents comes up to him and says, how'd you do that? How do you spend 50 years and nobody can ever remember you saying anything bad about anybody? And the guy said, well, I just decided early on in my career that I was only working with imperfect human beings just like me. And I decided to make a list. Everybody I worked with, I made a list of their top 10 faults. And then through the years, when I saw one of those top 10 faults, I just reminded myself, hey, they're not perfect any more than I am. I'm going to overlook this. And the young agent said, oh, I like that. He said, hey, how about if just for fun, I real quick write down what I think the boss's top 10 faults are, compare it with your list, and see how close we get. And the fellow kind of chuckled and said, well, to tell you the truth, I never really wrote them down. But every time he did something that bothered me, I always said, boy, lucky for him, that's one of the 10. Tom, what a mindset to go through life. What a mindset to realize that people are going to mess up. They're going to get on your nerves at times. Okay, they're human. Most of the time, you can just blow it off. You don't have to react. You don't have to create the conflict. Have that list of 10 mindset that says, you know what, people are going to be people. I'm one of them at times. I'm going to mess up at times, not on purpose, but part of our nature. And so that list of 10 mindset is just so helpful to overlook. And there's a Bible verse that's escaping my mind. I believe it's a proverb that says, wise is the person who overlooks wrongs.
Absolutely.
It's good advice.
Let's look at A of play.
You know what? That's my favorite one, Tom. You hit it. The A is assume good intent. And again, when I do a workshop, I ask this question. Tom, I'm going to ask you. Obviously, you can't raise your hand, so you'll have to respond verbally. Get ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
I ask this question. Raise your hand or say yes if you have ever offended, mistreated, disappointed another human being when you really didn't mean to.
Absolutely.
What took you so long? that's what I say in the workshops. I mean, hands shoot up. We've all done that. Well, what's the chance if somebody has just offended you or treated you poorly or said something to you? Maybe they didn't mean to. Maybe it was inadvertent. Maybe it had nothing to do with you. But Tom, if you react, if you go, oh yeah, then you just created the argument, the conflict. It's always the second person, not the first. The first does whatever they do for whatever reasons. It's how the second person either reacts to the attack or responds and ministers to the pain. So I teach assume good intent. When somebody does offend you or treat you poorly, your first reaction ought to be internal. Whoa, that didn't feel very good. I wonder what's going on with them. And Tom, what you're going to come up with is, you know, I know his kid's been in some trouble lately, or I know her mom's been real sick lately. I hope I'm not saying make excuses for bad behavior. I wouldn't ever want to promote that. But Tom, life is hard. Life is hard. And everybody you meet is hurting in some ways. And if we could assume good intent, assume that, you know what, they probably didn't mean to do that, I can respond in love rather than react with an attack, we could prevent so many conflicts. Now, sometimes it is a genuine attack. Well, it'll come again if that's the case. But if you can just get past the first one without overreacting, assuming good intent, knowing that hurting people are going to hurt people. I think you and my parents probably sang that song, "You Always Hurt the Ones You Love."
Mm-hmm.
That's because they're in striking distance. If I'm hurting, I'm going to take it out on somebody else, and it's going to be a coworker, a family member, a church member, not because I'm evil and a terrible person, but because hurting people are going to hurt people. If we can assume that when people do mistreat us, they didn't mean it, at least as our first assumption, yeah, we can prevent a lot of conflicts.
Well, listeners, we've been listening to Ron Price as he reviews his book, Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Work. We're going through the acronym, How to Prevent Conflict. We completed the A. We're moving on to Y. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi folks, Jelaine Fenner here. We are definitely living in uncertain times, and for some of us, it's scary. Signs of the times are everywhere. Jesus is coming back soon. Read Revelation chapter 22. Jesus says, "Surely I am coming quickly." We at Strong Tower Radio have a free book for you called The Great Controversy. Go to the back of the book and read chapters 35 to 42. It'll help you understand the times we're living in and what's ahead. This book even has 800 historical quotes and 1,200 Bible quotes. I love this book. Call Strong Tower Radio today, 231-468-2087, and ask for The Great Controversy while supplies last. And if we don't answer, please leave a message asking for The Great Controversy with your name, address, and phone number. That's 231-468-2087. On Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Folks, Ron Price is back with Tom Majuri. He's the author of a series of books, Play Nice in Your Sandbox, and we're looking at the work edition of this three-part series. We've looked at the acronym PLAY, Play Nice. We got through the A, and now we're going to the Y. Ron, what is Y stand for?
And Tom, I'm going to give you a hint. There's not a whole lot of words in the English language that begin with Y. So in Play Nice in Your Sandbox at Work, the Y chapter is yield, and play nice in your sandbox at home, the Y chapter is yield, and you can probably guess that in play nice in your sandbox at church, the Y chapter is yield. But there's a different focus on each yield that I talk about. In the play nice in your sandbox at work, I'm really talking about listening. And Tom, most of us can hear with relative ease, or some of us have gone to hearing assistance and hearing aids, but we can hear without thinking about it. Listening is a whole different matter. And so what I'm suggesting, if you want to prevent conflict, really listen to what others are saying, because you might learn something. You may have formed wrong perceptions or gotten the wrong impression, what have you. And if you'll listen to what the other's really saying rather than what your inner thought process is determining they're saying, again, a lot of conflicts can be prevented. So many conflicts come from misunderstandings that one person said something that the other person didn't hear, or vice versa. I'm talking about listening with empathy, not only with your ears, but with your heart, really trying to understand what the other person is saying. We don't do that enough. We don't do it enough.
You started out the chapter saying we all desire to be understood, and you take a baby that wants to be tended to, and then as we get into elementary school, we want to be understood, we want to be accepted. In order to do that, I guess somebody has to listen to us, and sometimes we need to listen to somebody else.
And if we have that desire, we're pretty safe in assuming that others have the same desire to be understood, and it never goes away. Now, again, do you want to be understood by some stranger that you just meet once? No, not necessarily. But somebody with whom you interact on a regular basis, yeah, you want them to understand you. Well, guess what? They want you to understand them. And it's a good practice. I promise it's a good practice.
I like the quote that you put here by Dean Rusk. I remember hearing him on the news. I believe he was in the U.S. government. And one of his quote is, "One of the best ways to persuade others is with your ears, by listening to them."
Yeah, isn't that a great quote? I don't know where I found that, but yeah, it's so true. We think we have to persuade others. And Tom, that's another point. Most people, especially in conflict situations, talk in what I once heard referred to as the shoot and reload method of communication. And by that, I mean we fire off, we say whatever we want to say, and then maybe we pause once in a while the other babbles on about something, but we're not listening. We're reloading so that we can fire off again. It's very common, very frustrating, very unproductive. Far better. What's that expression? God gave us two ears and one mouth. It would serve us well to use them in that ratio.
Exactly. Now, the last half of the acronym is NICE. Explain the category of NICE, what the acronym stands for, and let's drill through them.
All right. And again, the play is the prevent trivial matters. Not all conflicts can be prevented, but a lot of them can. The NICE is, all right, what about if you're in a conflict? It can't be prevented. We've got to get it resolved. Well, the N is negotiate with, not against, the other person. Don't look at the other person as the problem. Don't look at the other person as the enemy. Force yourself if you have to, but do what you need to do to look at the other person as an ally, an advocate, somebody who wants this problem resolved just as much as you do. If you can do that, you're going to look at them in a different light. You're not going to cast them as the enemy and, oh, I've got to win over them. No. Negotiate with them to try to arrive at a mutually beneficial agreement.
You know, my wife used to tell our youngest son, we're not the enemy.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. But he could easily portray you with that if you're stopping him from doing something he wanted to do, what have you. Yeah. Good point.
Let's talk about I, and the I has probably affected me in a positive way. Looking at people's, the I stands for interest rather than position. And please paint this picture for us. You did a very nice job in the book.
Well, thank you, Tom. You're kind. A lot of times problems arise because one person says, I want this, and the other person says, well, I want that. Well, maybe there's not enough this or that to go around. So what I challenge people in this chapter is to get beneath the what you say you want. And you do that by asking the shortest question in the English language, the question we hate to hear from toddlers. One word. Tom, what do you think that question is?
Why?
Yeah, why do you want that? And listen for the answer, because the answer is going to be their true underlying interest, concern, need, desire, etc. Why do you want that? Or another way is, all right, so I understand you're asking me for this or that. What would that do for you? How would that benefit you? Because chances are, Tom, that while you can't grant what they've originally asked for, you can give them what they really want in a different fashion, which hopefully will be totally satisfactory. You know, I want apple pie. Why do you want apple pie? Well, because I want a sweet dessert. Well, we have peach pie. Oh, yeah, okay, that'll probably work. So it wasn't apple pie that I wanted. It was a sweet dessert.
That's right. You know, it kind of makes me think about something I heard. A lot of times you need to ask the second and third question to get to the real issue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's something called the seven levels of why. You make a statement, well, why is that? Well, because of this and this. Oh, and why do you think that is? Oh, because of this and this. And yeah, like you just said, you're drilling down. And finally you get to, oh, that's what this is all about. Now we know what the real interests are. Now we're in a better position to deal with them.
Oh, so, right. What about C? I believe it's cooperate.
To reach a mutually beneficial agreement, truly reach win-win. You know, there's a modern-day definition of win-win. It's do it my way and nobody gets hurt. That's not the kind of win-win that I'm advocating here. Tom, if you're in a dispute with somebody else and you really want it resolved, if you walk away going, well, I got what I want, I don't care about them, Tom, you haven't won because that dispute is not over. The other person is going to say, wait a minute, now, I'm not satisfied. So they're going to look for a way to bring it back up, and it can go on and on. I did a mediation several years ago between these two neighbors who were in and out of court, in and out of court, in and out of court for 4 years until I was asked to step into the situation and mediate. And I got them thinking, come on, we can't walk out of this one winning, one losing. It won't be over. So when they looked to reach a true win-win that each could be satisfied with, then the dispute was ended and they haven't been in court since, as far as I know. Now, a real quick comment, though. I don't care about 50-50. I all the time hear people, oh, it's got to be fair. It's got to be 50-50. Oh, so if it was 49-51, that wouldn't be fair. Well, maybe. How about 48-52, 47-53, 46-54? Come on. Don't worry about 50-50. Be concerned, can each party walk away with this agreement satisfied? That, you know what? I'm okay with it. I got enough out of it. I gave what I was willing to give. I'm satisfied. If that's the case, I don't care if it's 90-10. I mean, it shouldn't be probably, but you get what I'm saying. Just look at it from that yardstick. Can each person say, yep, I'm satisfied with this deal. I'm going to do my part to make sure it lasts. Cooperate to reach a mutually beneficial agreement.
You name drop one of my heroes in this chapter, Lee Iacocca. What was the secret of his success?
Yep. He didn't want to walk away thinking, oh, I got the best of them. He knew he'd have to deal with them again. And so he treated them fairly. He wanted to make sure they felt it was a win also. Yeah, I'm a fan as well. Thank you for mentioning that.
E, what does E stand for in Play Nice?
It's explore options, get out of the box. And I share an example of brainstorming. Tom, I'll put you on the spot, but simply, not threatening. Have you ever been in a brainstorm session that was an absolute total waste of your time?
No. Nope.
You could have been anywhere else. It would have been a productive use of your time. No? Oh, okay. You're fortunate. I have. And I think as you think back, you'll probably think, you know, wait a minute, now that I think of it, brainstorming is not always a positive, productive session. But again, we can all think back to effective brainstorming sessions that did produce a desired result, an improvement of some sort. It was a good use of our time. And what I share in the book is the NASA model. If you've ever seen the movie Apollo 13.
Yeah, that's right.
This is the brainstorming session that they had. The first rule is everybody knows why we're there. What's the challenge? What's the issue? What are we trying to address, resolve, fix, what have you? So everybody's got to be clear on the purpose of the brainstorming session. The next rule is if you think it, you say it. If you come up with a possible solution, say it. Don't filter, well, I don't know, it's too expensive, or I don't know, take too long. If you think it, you say it. But Tom, the third rule is crucial. No one else comments on anybody else's idea. Let's say we're in a brainstorming session, and you say, well, how about if we do this and this? And I say something like, Tom, did you take stupid pills this morning? That would never work. I've probably hurt your feelings, true?
Yes.
Yeah. And guess what? We're not going to hear any more from you because now it's risky. Now it's dangerous. You're not going to put yourself in that position again. But guess what? Nobody else is either because now it's a toxic environment and I might get hurt if I say something, so I'm just going to clam up. So everybody knows why they're there. Second rule, if you think it, you say it. Third rule, nobody comments on anybody else's ideas. Then you're going to end up with a list of, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 possible ideas. And Tom, you yourself might say, you know what, cross that off. I don't know what I was thinking. That's not a good idea. But your feelings aren't hurt. We didn't stifle your input or your creativity. And the beauty of it also, Tom, is that your idea, even though it may not be what we end up with, might spark in somebody else's mind, oh, wait a minute, maybe not that, but how about this? Or how about if we tweak that idea just this way? That's why it's so important. If you have a thought, throw it out, get the creative juices going. We'll worry about finding the best solution later. For right now, we're generating ideas. And then once we have them all, then we can go back and filter and assess and rate them and so forth. So, yeah, I love brainstorming. If it works well, it can be wonderful. If not, Well,
listeners, you've just listened to Ron Price and his book, Play Nice in Your Sandbox, and we went through the acronym for the work variation on that. But wait, there's even more. There are 16 more tools in chapter section 4. Ron, we have about 2 or 3 minutes to get some of your favorites. So you want to throw out a couple of your favorite tools?
You know, I do, Tom, and thank you. And by the way, this is the at work, but 100% of what's in this book will help people in their home lives, in their church lives, dealing with other people, 100%. When we get to the at home book, probably 80% of that is applicable elsewhere. When we get to the at church book, probably 60% is applicable. But I want to talk about button guard. It's chapter 26. Who's in charge here anyway? And Tom, there are probably people in your life who can push your buttons, types of people who can push your buttons if you're not careful. And what I teach here, it comes from the book Verbal Judo. I adapted it from George Thompson's book Verbal Judo. But you first identify who pushes your buttons, what types of people. You then give them a name, and then you own them. And let me see if I can do this briefly. The way this helped me, people who drive in the left lane slower than I wish them to travel push my buttons. I don't know how you folks are back in Michigan and Illinois, but in New Mexico, it's a frequent occurrence. And so I would flash my headlights asking them to pull over, and if they did, great. If not, I'd get all worked up and riled. My blood pressure would go up, my teeth would be gritting, my fists would be clenched, until I read trigger guard, what he calls it, George Thompson, I call it button guard. I gave them a name, Lefty LaLanne. And you do want to make it a polite name because it might slip out in public. But Tom, I'm telling you, for the last 25, 30 years, when I come up behind somebody driving slowly, I'll signal one time asking them to pull over. If they don't, I just calmly say, Ron, you found Lefty. Pull over, speed up, and go on your way. My blood pressure's not up. My teeth aren't gritted. My fists aren't clenched. If you have somebody who pushes your buttons, give them a name, a polite name, and just let that serve to you that, hey, I'm not going to let them push my buttons. I control the switch. I can deactivate it. Is it always simple? No, not necessarily. Or easy, I should say. It is simple. It's not always easy, but it's worth doing. It'll spare you a bunch of grief and aggravation, I promise.
Well, Ron, I will have to work on an acronym for those who pass me in the construction zone on the left and cut in ahead of me, but we'll talk. That'll be another day.
Yeah. We can talk off air on that one, Tom. I'll help you with that.
That'll require some therapy there, but
yeah.
Ron, why don't you tell our listeners how they might get a hold of you? I think we've just whetted their appetite about your book. How can they interact with you?
Well, a couple of ways. My email, and thank you for that opportunity, Tom. My email is ron@ronprice.com. That's simple enough. If you want to go longer, I also have ron@playniceinyoursandbox.com if you like to type out extra letters, but ron@ronprice.com. My phone, I'm old-fashioned. I love talking to people on the phone. 505-324-6328. 505-324-6328. My books are available on Amazon, but they charge more than I do. So if people get in touch with me, I'm happy to get the books in the mail to them and autograph them if they like. Some people like books signed, some don't. That's fine. But yeah, relationships are so important. Don't lose relationships. Don't suffer through damaged relationships just because you don't have the skills to prevent conflict when you can and should. Resolve conflict when that's the more appropriate course of action. So ron@ronprice.com. My website is ronprice.com, but that's undergoing major renovation as we speak. So I don't know if I like sending people there or not, but ron@ronprice.com is my email. 505-324-6328 is my phone number. And Tom, thank you again for the privilege of sharing that information.
Ron, it's been a pleasure. I have been blessed by this conversation and reading your book, and literally this will be in the reference section of my personal library and it will be read.
Well, I think I said in a previous segment, my friend Barnabas, thank you. Thank you for your encouragement, Tom. It means a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, listeners, this has been a Strong Tower Radio production. Your host, Tom Majeur, and stay tuned. There'll be more episodes with Ron Price at home and also at church. Stay tuned.